It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. Pella was just at my house installing some new windows and a new front door. And take it from me, working with Pella from start to finish was a great experience. I started in the showroom in Omaha and really got a great feel for the whole process of what goes into installing a window or installing a door into your home. And I was able to get a much better sense of what I was going to be installing in my home because I was able to actually like feel a door, look at a window, open the blind, close the blind. And then from there, the in-home consultation process with Debbie was outstanding. Just the whole care and the precision from their entire team, it was second to none. And the Pella experts, when they came in to install, man, they are impressive. They were able to finish the job quickly. And then the care they use with the drop cloths and all that stuff around the windows and inside my home was great. They were in and out. And my place is honestly cleaner now than before they arrived. I couldn't be happier with how it all turned out. I love my windows, especially my bay window. I love my front door. And it's really kind of changed and transformed the front of my house. And it's so cool. Every time I pull in my driveway, I get to look at those things, man. Working with the whole team at Pella, it just was an A-plus experience. If you need some new windows, a new door, you got to go with the team at Pella. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. All right, here we go. We're back. He's Willie. He's my buddy. He is, Fourth?
I think it's probably four. We got into good routine around Father's Day or Vegas trips.
Yes.
Anytime we do that, we hop on the mic.
Which is why we are here today. Vegas, we leave tomorrow. We will literally be in like 25, 30 minutes. We probably won't know this because we'll edit it out, but we will be checking into a flight in the middle of this pod as we are headed back to Vegas. You are like, you're the quarterback of this thing. You will it into existence every time, and we appreciate it.
Listen, man.
On behalf of all of our friends.
Well, you know? Here's the thing. We talked about this. Like, you get older, your window to do really anything is really slim. And coordinating something, even though we got 10 people going out to Vegas with us.
Which is amazing.
Which is a lot. But we're still missing some key members of the roster because
yes.
They got birthdays and other family stuff that's going on.
Right.
So
right.
As we've gotten older, somebody's got to take the point and saying, hey, listen, like this is when we're going, get on or not. But to not have that on the calendar and to not take time and go out and hang with your buddies is travesty if you don't do it.
Isn't it weird when you get older, you need to have something to look forward to, and then you just need to have something that then you can talk about. Like, remember, you need something like, aren't you excited for ... And then when you get with them, like, remember when we did that?
Right.
Like, that becomes like your existence as an adult.
Well, I mean, how much fun has the text thread been in the last month?
Right. Yeah, it's been great. It's been incredible.
But I will say, we were chatting and bantering before about the weather and getting out.
Yeah.
And you know what it reminds me of is the Colorado game when Frost's first game.
Yes.
Right? Where it's like all this anticipation, all this fun, but yet there was this cloud, literally and figuratively, that hung over.
You could see
it was coming. It's like, are we going to get this in or not?
Right.
And we're in the same parallel situation where, you know, hopefully that lightning doesn't strike at kickoff tomorrow when we're trying to get out of Epley. That day was electric.
Because were you in the stadium?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was in the stadium, too. We've talked about this a bunch, but it still is just remarkable that that happened. A game legitimately got canceled. They kicked it off and then called it the Savior's first game back. The stadium, that's on a short list of, like, electricity, palpable electricity in a stadium in my entire life that I've experienced. And then for it to get legitimately canceled is still wild to think about.
Well, yeah, so you're right. One, the buzz leading up to that game was unlike anything. And then, you know, what is it, the Sandlot when Benny the Jet Rodriguez knocks the cover off the ball, and he's like, now we can't play no more. And he's like, no, man, it's an omen. That was an omen of the Scott Frost era.
Right.
Believe in that kind of stuff, because everything from that moment seemed to go completely sideways, and the ball never bounced the way that we needed it to.
I know, and people are like, oh my God, are you seriously going to say what if about Frost? Like, it feels like if that game would have went just kicked off, maybe, I don't want to say everything is different, because maybe that's a little disingenuous. I'm like, maybe Frost just wasn't equipped on a variety of levels to ever enjoy a large amount of success sustained at Nebraska. But it does feel like that was an omen, and it just set everything down the wrong path.
Yeah, because you're right. Like, I think in the macro, right, things would have played out probably similarly to how they did. However, I think we win that Colorado game. I think we win the opener, and then we win the Colorado game. You get a game under your belt, you get the momentum, and who knows?
Yes. Yeah, that's because that's the thing, that the one thing Barrett used to always say was like, you trying to get a little bit of wind under their wings, you know, like a little bit of a pop of momentum, and he was get a wave, and they just could never get it.
Nope. Never got it.
Never got it. And my analogy always was when you were playing Tetris, you know how all it would take was like one bad, all of a sudden like a long rectangle, you get it, like you didn't get it all the way to the side, and now it's up, and then that leads to, oh, that one got stuck, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're dead.
There's always that long rectangle with a skinny one, like the small L type shape.
If you could get that one fit nicely, but that's what it felt like that game, like right out the gate, you had a long rectangle right in the middle, and then it just, before you know it, you're fighting a disaster of a situation. But yes, so basically we are Scott Frost in 2018 right now as we're waiting to feel out this weather. I'm pumped. So today we're going to talk a little Husker football. I kind of want to just get our frame where things are at, like where the fan base is at with Matt Rhule, Nebraska football right now, and then I have a whole bunch of fun hypothetical situations that we're going to dive into at the end. I Googled Chuck Klosterman hypotheticals. I don't know how he thinks of some of this stuff, because some of them are almost like, I had to pick and choose, like, okay, that's ridiculous. I'm not even going to ask that question. But some of them are just fantastic. By the way, I'm turning 40 in a couple of weeks. Any advice for a guy that's about to be turning 40 in a couple of weeks here? We had one of your big Vegas bashes was your 40th birthday.
Go on more trips. I mean, you just got back with one.
Yes.
With your wife, right?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Down in Mexico.
Yep.
I think that, I don't know how you are, but I always used to be the type of person where, when I was younger especially, where you'd have like a vacation, a Vegas trip or a Mexico trip on the books, and I put so much stake in that and look forward to it so much, almost to the point where, like, when I got back, I was a little bit depressed. And somewhere along that road, as I got older, it became, well, that's a silly way to think and live. Every moment's there, right? So the opportunity as you get older, I think it's just to dumb things down, be really simple about the things that matter, and just pay attention to that shit. That's my advice.
Okay, that's good advice. I do feel like we went to dinner two weeks ago, and I made the comment that I am, as I'm getting closer to 40, there's something about 40 and why we arbitrarily choose 40 over any other number is kind of stupid. But the comment I gave to you guys at dinner was like, and this is a really like bleak, depressing comment, is like, when you're young, you have this sense of wonder of what it's going to be like. What when you're 12, when you're 15, when you're 18, you're whatever, you're, what is my life going to be like? What's my career going to be like? What are my kids going to be like? What's my wife going to be like? What's my house maybe going to be like? I don't have that same wonder of what's life going to be like when I'm 67. What is my life going to be like when I'm retired? So I worry about like that sense of wonder. That's not to say I'm not like, I don't look forward to like things, but do you get what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, totally. Well, in 40 is kind of weird, right? Who's the comedian that I sent you the bit on Instagram the other day?
Bargatze?
Yeah, Bargatze, yeah. Right? And yes. 40, you're still, I don't know about you, but like 40, I'm 42. I don't feel much different than I did at 22. even though I have kids, a wife, and I am obviously much older, but he had that clip where he's like, yeah. I feel like at 42, I can still hang out with a 23-year-old.
Right.
Right? But then a 45-year-old comes along, he's like, beat it, old man.
Yeah.
There's something about 40 that's still extremely young, because it is, but also you're hitting that trajectory to where I think what you're saying is true. It's like, what big life events do you have on your horizon,
right,
that are like, will fill you with wonder?
Because you made a comment at dinner, and it's the only thing I've arrived at is like, all of that wonder shifts to your kids. I wonder what my kids are going to fill in the blank,
right?
Whatever. But that's a different kind of wonder than when it's for yourself, you
totally.
Know?
Totally. Yeah.
And yeah. And so, yeah, it's, but you're right. Like, talking about how you feel mentally, that is so true on a variety of fronts. Of like, one of the things that's amazing as you get older is when you're younger and you look at older people, you have this sense that they have, like, I thought growing up every adult had it all figured out. They knew exactly what they were doing. I thought every coach knew what they were doing. Every parent knew what they were doing. Every business owner knew what they were doing. And you come to find out that basically nobody has any real, you're doing your best. There's a big difference between doing your best and having it completely like figured out. And that's a weird realization too, as you approach something like four. I think like what I thought, how quote unquote smart and sure of things I've would be when I would think about how I'm going to be when I'm 40. I'm nowhere even. Not there.
Do you find that liberating or not?
Well, that's a good way. That's a good question. I think I find it more. If you want to look at it liberating, it's very liberating. But I think I more so find it like funny and scary at the same time.
Yeah. I find myself defaulting with my kids, like, because I, like you, when you're growing up, you think adults have all the answers. And now I'm self-aware enough to know that I don't. And so yeah. I don't try to pretend in any way, shape, or form to my kids that I have the answers.
Right.
Lots of times when like Jackson will ask me a question, I'm like, how would I know? I don't know that. I don't know.
Right. Well, right? No, I had that moment. You know, I think one of the things that's been eye-opening for me is now being a business owner. And, you know, and this is maybe letting people too much in behind the curtain, but like, we were at an all-staff meeting and some of our employees were asking Alex and I questions. And they would ask a question, and in my mind, I'm like, I don't know. But I'm the fucking owner of the business. You know, like, I need to know the answer to that, or at least know how I'm going to, like, what I'm going to do to track down that answer. Now, I think we always know, like, okay, I know how to maybe track down the best possible solution to something, but it's weird. It's weird to sit, because I would have never thought when I was 18, I'd be talking to my boss or something like that, and they would be sitting there maybe do a question that I had, and internally they're like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know what to do with that.
Well, that's where you get into, like, old philosophy and ancient wisdom, right, where they say, like, you know, the people who know the most are the people who realize how little they know, right? You get
yes.
quotes like that. And people that are willing to say, I don't know. I mean, let me figure it out.
Right.
Those are some of my favorite people.
Yeah. It's funny you say it, like, you just saying that made me think of Bill Self's answer to a question he was asked at a press conference this year. He said, what is the difference? He said, you've been coaching for a long time. What's the difference between the freshmen that play and have success versus the ones that don't for you? And his answer was basically that he goes, it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, you got to have a baseline athletic ability and all those things. But the freshmen that have success are the ones that come to grips with, and the sooner they know that they don't know, they're the ones.
The better they do.
Like the players that accept like, oh, I'm not sure on this, so I'm just going to like, I think basically what he's saying is like the ones that totally just embrace what they're being coached to do, those are the ones that, it's the ones that maybe think they got like a little bit of a better idea. Those are the ones that have.
Which is just a more sophisticated way of defining coachability.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Right. But it's interesting how on any point in your life, whether you're talking about an incoming McDonald's All-American at 18 to play for Bill Self, or as 42-year-old Mitt, like the suit, like there's some positive in being like, I don't embracing like, I don't know. I don't know. I'll try to figure it out, but I don't know.
Well, I'll say this. Coming back to your original question, advice at 40. When we got back from Vegas, I think I told you this, and we were in the parking garage in Epley, and we were pulling out, and I just started to just like tear up and cry. And Amy was like, well, what's wrong? Like, what's going on? I said, I'm just overwhelmed by how amazing that was. Mm-hmm. But I'm also overwhelmed by knowing that that specific moment is never going to happen again with those people. Right. So as you start to get older, I think you start to realize, I start to see things in terms of moments instead of years. Right. Like, I might have 7 more Christmases left with my, you know, XYZ person.
Yeah.
Right. Or moments where your kids are going to be gone at 18, Jackson's 12. I got 6 more Christmases.
Right.
In that environment.
Right.
And so soaking those up and being present during them, it's an easy thing to say, a harder thing to do.
Right.
That's my advice, man.
There you go. That's good. I mean, because I've thought about that with Christmas of like, how many more Christmases do you have with of like Mava, like the believing in, because when you stop believing in Santa, that changes Christmas a little bit, you know?
Yeah, spin that one, Dad.
I know. That's gonna be tough to do. Okay. We said we were gonna banter. That was almost 15 minutes of banter. That was good. Where help me out. I like talking to you. I like picking your brain from like getting the philosophical fan perspective of where maybe you're at and the greater you of all of Husker football fans are at. Like, where do you think everyone's at with Nebraska football? Because for me, I feel like everyone's in this. I think everyone likes Matt Rhule. Like, really, like, how could you not like him? But I get the sense that there are some people that are in show me mode right now. And I don't know. Do you agree where would you say where's the fan base at with Rhule, Nebraska football heading into year 2?
Well, don't you think that both of those things that you just said are true? Meaning that obviously, given the run that we've had, everybody's in show me mode. Whether that's fair to Rhule or not, the sentiment is like, all right, if we want to get behind something, we've been getting behind something for a while now with no results to show for it. So everybody's in show me mode. And the good news, I think, for everybody is that the threshold of what show me mode is so low now that things like we've been talking about for the last couple of years, a bowl game's enough.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that there's naturally, that's the sentiment is, all right, enough talk, show me. At the same time, I don't know how you don't get behind Matt Rhule, and that's been enhanced by the fact that Albert's left and the way that Rhule handled that and rallied everybody around it, both like intellectually and emotionally. I haven't talked to anybody who's not in his corner. He's saying all the right things and doing all the right things, by my estimation.
Yeah, I know it's. I don't know how he could do a better job of being like the face of the program, CEO, messenger. Like, I don't know. Explain to me how someone could do a better job.
Right.
Well, like I don't
saw,
know.
I don't know. Because I saw a clip with him. The perfect example of this, in my opinion, I saw a clip with him. He said, basically, what should I be looking for if I'm a Husker football fan?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I should be looking for people who don't put the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
Right? I want to come out and see a serious game, not comedy football, basically, is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to me, that's such a great answer because, one, it's honest. And the humility with which he says that, there's true.
Yes.
Like, we're fine. Lose a game. Fine, don't make a bowl game. But don't do it in embarrassing fashion.
I know. That. I guess that's the thing. That's the dichotomy of, like, a bunch of different things being true at the same time and being hard to kind of reconcile those things. Like, I really like Matt Rhule. I think he has done an incredible job of all the things we just talked about. But to me, the close game management stuff was bad enough last year, and Jeff Sims was bad enough last year that makes me squirm when I combine those things. You know what I mean? Like, you can, I love Rhule. I love every time he's at the podium, everything he says, I'm like, yes, this is perfect. But then I remember, you know, there were management coaching things. Now, maybe a good quarterback solves all that shit. Maybe that's true. That's what'll be fascinating about the next couple of years with, like, can you simply just interject a 5-star number one quarterback in the country and somehow it is like amoxicillin to the infection of Nebraska football and it's just, boom, cured? or is there more to it? But that's what I struggle with, is like the close game management coaching stuff was bad enough, and Jeff Sims was bad enough, which is a window into their talent evaluation and all those kinds of things that make, that's what gives me some pause too.
Yeah, the Sims thing's baffling, just because, not to take pot shots at Sims by any stretch of the imagination. It's just curious to, I'd love to know the behind the scenes conversations and revisionist history around like Sims versus Thompson, for example. And who knows, maybe there's something else going on with Casey where he was going to transfer anyways.
Right, and he was hurt in the spring, and maybe that just led
right.
to
like, so maybe it's completely irrelevant.
Right.
But I think to your point, when the bar was so low to stake, I mean, Sims had his big time question marks across the board in a lot of different areas when he came in. He was athletic.
Right.
And that was his upside. But there, from a quarterback perspective, to get you over the hump, to get to a bowl game, to go 7-5, 8-4, there's way safer plays, in my estimation. So that's certainly on the table and worth questioning.
Because I can't help when you lump it all together. Like, if you had to choose, was last year, like, were you disappointed in last year, yes or no? I don't know how you say that you weren't disappointed.
Well, especially the way that it ended.
That's what I'm saying. You had 5 wins. You lost 4 in a row the end of the year.
All winnable games.
All winnable games. A lot of the stuff was, again, the same song and dance of, like, you can't get out of your own way with simple things. And I get, like, we can sit here and rule consider and go, guys, like, listen. I mean, our quarterback situation was a disaster. All of our skill guys got hurt. But I get all that. But you still should have won. You should have gotten to at least 6 wins, probably 7 wins.
Yeah. Well, and you were still playing Jim Ager right here in Lincoln. Like, it's a par 3 course with that schedule.
Right.
That we had.
Right.
That was a gift of a schedule. So 5-7 and maybe the easiest schedule in the last 20 years.
Yes. And so I guess that's the thing that's tough, is like, I heard Michael Sevier ask this question to Sip on the radio like a couple months ago. It was like, did last year feel different, or did it just kind of feel like a continuation of all the other years? And I think, unfortunately, just when watching the games, because when you take the press conferences and all that stuff into, yes, then it feels different. But if you just watch the games, to me, last year felt very similar to a Frost team, a Riley team, it felt very similar. Which is that's the thing that's like, that sucks that I can't turn on the mic and disingenuously like say that it and lie. They're like, oh yeah, it felt way different. Like,
I think outcome wise it did. I think maybe if you're looking for a silver lining within that, most of the time, if not all the time, the effort was there last year. And agreed. I can't say the same thing under Riley and Frost.
And I mean, here's the thing: is I maybe unfairly don't give Rule credit for the defense being good. Like, we tend to do this where we like, well, Rule, that's Tony White. It's like, well, Rule has something to do with that too, obviously. But it just, so I guess as we're talking this out, it's just the reality that I'd imagine if this is how our inner monologues, this is how a lot of people are, where it's impossible not to like Rule. It's impossible not to buy into what he's saying. I think it's telling that, like, nobody has left the program. Like, they don't, in a world where the portal is just going crazy, like, everybody clearly, like, wants to be playing for Matt Rule.
Right.
Like,
see that to me is a gigantic win. And he started to lay the foundation last year when he started to do the stuff with, like, hey, before the season, everybody's staying in the dorms. He talked about cohesion. He talked about, hey, there's so much more. Winning's going to be a byproduct of doing everything else the right way.
Yes.
And to me, that's a really difficult message to execute.
Right.
And if he can get that right, that's a huge competitive advantage for Nebraska.
Agree. And so there's a lot to like, but then there's like, then the football games come and there's still like some concerning things. And so that's where it feels like it's a big year. I don't think like, If you go out and go 5-7 or something like that, like, oh man, I feel like that's going to be hard. Because at some point, even for the, like, for everyone, everybody's got to get some sort of tangible return on this thing. The players, the fans, everyone, to really feel good about where we're at. Because if you sit here. It's just hard. I think everybody gets tired to get out of the like the trying to explain away things or rationalize losing. You know, like that we've gotten pretty good at that. And I will say, I mean, I was doing that every year with Frost, and maybe that's a part of like that's a little unfair that I'm just like out of energy of doing that a little bit. But I think a lot of people are.
I think that it's like anything in life, right? It creates a paradox where like, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. Everybody wants to win. I don't know how you feel, but as I get older, the winning component of it becomes less and less important. However, it's still what you're chasing. You still want that to be a part of the program. And that means different things to different people. I think what people around here for sure are so in some cases blindly loyal and want so badly for this to work that you've gone such an extended period of time where you justify the losing or you make excuses for whatever it is that now the winning needs to be there for people to enjoy the process.
Yes.
It's a lot of work to go to a football game.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of money. And effort and time. And like when you do that, you tailgate, it's fun. Whether you're at the game or at your neighbor's house or whatever, you're having a good time, you're hamming it up. All this stuff's fun. What people I think are desirous of is the cherry on top.
Yeah.
Right? Make it fun on the back end. When we go to Vegas, the Michigan State game.
Yes.
Like what an amazing experience that was until we punted the ball to the wrong side.
And it just it
literally
flipped the game. Nebraska loses and it ruined our Vegas trip.
Right. Now, part of that's on us.
Yeah, we should have rallied. We got to be tougher mentally, but I mean,
but that's where people are at, and it's 2 years removed from that.
See, and this is where, and sorry to bounce around here, this is where I thought I found the scene in Memphis for Nebraska basketball's NCAA tournament game as kind of like symbolic into how not hungry, starving the Nebraska fan base is for that cherry on top of what you're kind of talking about. Of like they are
just in general, Nick?
Just in general. And I'm excluding like volleyball's given everybody a bunch of moments like that. I'm talking like that those like men's basketball football which makes up a large portion of the fan base. It just that was like that scene in Memphis, talking to Mule who was there, Jake Mulezen was there, like just it was like, oh man, these people are dying for just like a little bit of success at all to just totally go crazy, you know?
Right. Right.
And so, yeah.
Because they show up unconditionally.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I can't remember. I had a Facebook post about that before the game, and maybe this was protecting myself against exactly what happened.
Yeah.
But right. It was like, no matter what happens, I'm going to show up because I enjoy it. I support it, and I want to be a part of Husker basketball. But I'm lying if I say that that's like, at least in the moment, that took a toll.
Yeah.
Right? We bounced back, but there's got to be a shelf life on that at some point, I
know.
Would imagine.
And we've had this conversation a bunch, but when is that point where people start to slowly like...
See, and I think about that from a generational perspective.
Yeah.
Right? Because you and I were able to experience the 90s. And basically, anybody who's listening to this podcast has...
Same experience,
yeah. Right? But people who... Let's go back to, like, I don't know, 2010, the last time we made a Big 12 championship.
Mm-hmm.
14 years old, right? Anybody born after that's 14, and they have really no attachment outside of what they've experienced through their rituals or relationship with their parents.
Right.
Right? The winning's not what's going to bring them back. So, like, if you go and do that for an entire generation, another 6 years, like, what do you hang your hat on to? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially with NIL and where how much players bounce around.
I know.
It's really hard. Like, what are you really attaching yourself to?
Yeah, that's his. I know. I don't. Yeah, because it's hard if you go, what are you attaching yourself to now? You know, you're probably attaching Nebraska football as an idea of what it was.
It's a concept.
It's something that I do because
I was like indoctrined into it.
Yes. But
if the winning's not there,
eventually,
like, does the indoctrination like diminish and then you lose your fan base?
And that's the thing that is just, I don't know. I've said I get that rules, you know, you got to let him, you know, build this thing back up. There's been some issues over the, you know, obviously a long bowl drought, but like, I don't think there's as long of a runway of things for Rule as people think there is. Like, I think there's more urgency on this thing than you think.
There's for sure.
Yes,
for sure. I don't know what the runway is.
I don't either. I don't know how to, I just think like, man, you can't, I just don't think you can, I think another bowl-less season, another 5-7 season is a problem.
There's no good way to go bowl-less.
No.
Right? Like if you end up not making a bowl, last year was maybe as close as you can get as to like a good way, but it still ended in self-destruction, so it didn't feel like a good way.
Right.
But like how, there's not, what are you, short of just complete injury decimation, there's no good way to justify not going 6-6.
Especially with how we talk about a schedule, like the way this schedule sets up with whatever it is, 5 of the first 6 at home, a lot of very, I mean, you got UTEP, Northern Iowa, like you have a very manageable schedule on the front end of this thing. You return a lot of pieces defensively, like.
Our defense should be good.
Should be really good. And so, and then you, then it'll be interesting where, and then you got the Raiola thing, which does it not feel like, because in some ways, Dylan Raiola is more of like, he's a microcosm of the Nebraska fans in the moment of like, they always are going to have some sort of thing to point to for hope, but people are also, I sense there's been a little, I thought there'd be more craziness for Raiola over the, like, there was craziness when he committed and came, but then I feel like that has subsided a little bit. And maybe that's by design. I think Nebraska's maybe done a good job of, like, not trying to pour gasoline on that. But the Raiola thing is really exciting. I don't know. I feel like I thought there was going to be a little bit more craziness around it
over the course of the offseason. That's just timing. Right?
Could be.
Because, like, yeah, we were at a handful of games this year when he was at the basketball games and people were going nuts and, you know, there was a lot of what you're describing, yes, was happening. Right? We were eating at Momo's one night and Jackson was like, you know, slaps me on the shoulder and in walks Raiola and, you know, he went over and gave him a handshake and said, hey, we're glad that you're coming here. Right?
Nice.
Like, for him to notice.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
to me, that's...
Yeah, that's a,
you know, he's not doing that to most players. That's pretty high profile, right?
Right.
I think that you're going to see that ramp up as we get into August.
I think everyone's fired up for Raiola overall, but there is, I do think there's some people that have to kind of like compartmentalize, like his journey to eventually sign with Nebraska was one of those things that is a little. I think people kind of got to go,
I mean, you know what though? I feel more confident about that because of Rule and how he operates. Like when he says in a press conference, you know what the going rate is for quarterback?
Yeah.
Like he's not sidestepping that.
Yeah.
Like the environment's the environment. Raiola went there probably because of money, right? Or the perception of whatever it was he was promised.
Right.
Didn't work out. It's hard to get 5-star quarterbacks. We got ours now. We're going to pay him, and then we're going to do it right.
Right.
And hope that it all works out. Like, that's the environment. That's the landscape. Why not just call it what it is?
Right. And I think there's also a cautionary tale of, I think what you saw with Adrian Martinez is, like, no matter how talented of a quarterback you have, if you don't fill the pieces around him, not only from, like, a player standpoint, but special teams and all that stuff, like, Adrian Martinez was very talented, but he couldn't overcome all of the other issues. So I think there's also an element of like people are very excited about Dylan Raiola, but they know that like, well, he can be all he's cracked up to be, but if the offensive line isn't great, there aren't good skill positions, if the special teams isn't better, it might not really change a whole lot.
Totally. Either. Well, totally. And people saw that firsthand when Adrian went to K-State and had the success that he did, right?
Yeah, you're like ooh,
maybe that was on us for all the shit that we gave him, even though, you know, there was times where it seemed justified.
Right.
I think also, though, too, and it's way exponentially harder to do in football than it is in basketball, but like, the stuff that I've read coming off back-to-back championships with UConn and what Hurley's done there, the way he goes about it, at least the way he talks about how he goes about like recruiting parents as much as he does kids,
yep,
and recruiting attitude as much as he does talent, mm-hmm, like I see that and hear that in Rule. Where, like, this is a sum of the parts game, which I'm huge on. You probably go back and listen to the other podcasts.
Yes.
I say the same thing over and over again. But it's winning and having success is acknowledging the environment that we're in and then Trump being honest about it and putting the right pieces of the puzzle together to make it happen. I think he's going to do it.
Yeah, he does seem more, you're right, like, and again, whether it's, like, Hurley has the benefit of like we've seen the results now, and so like what you're like, okay, yeah, I know exactly what you, I believe what you're saying,
right?
But
is that folklore, right? Like, yeah, easy to say that. After
it's easy
the
to
fact.
Say that, but I do, but I agree. I think even just the fact that Rule, and these are the things of like what gives you confidence in Rule, those things that you're talking about, like he's very keenly aware of the importance of fit mentally and how you're built and all that stuff, and like being careful about. Of who you're bringing into that locker room.
Well, Kobe had, as your picture here in the podcast room,
yeah.
Kobe has an amazing interview one time, and I saw it, and he basically, what he was saying is that younger, when he was younger in his career, one of the players came up to him and was like, you got to understand basically like me and where I'm coming from in my story. And Kobe's default position was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, why would I do that? He said, but then when he went back and sat on it and thought about it, what he realized is like, if I don't take the time to do that, as fiercely competitive as I am, to understand the individual and what they're thinking and feeling, like I can't get the most out of them,
mm-hmm,
right? And so if you're not doing that, you're marginalizing performance, and that's really hard to do because it's not scalable, but that's a competitive advantage for sure if you can do it now, and that's all coaching.
Right. I mean, because Rule does talk about physical traits. He will talk
he
about
wants,
that.
He wants them both.
Yeah. So, that's what I say is he'll talk about physical traits, but he really, like, I like that he likes multi-sport guys. I like that he values all of those things, that the competitiveness, all that sorts of stuff. So, like, I think he's on the right track with, and that's what gives me confidence that, like, I just think he's too smart, too self-aware, too introspective, too detail-oriented for this thing to not work.
It makes you kind of get scared if it doesn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, because that's it. And things have a way of, because I would have said the same thing about Frost. I could have built up like, it's going to work because of XYZ. And then you learn and you're able to reflect on like, oh, well, it didn't work because of XYZ. And so you don't know what those things are. But yeah, like if it's hard to build the case as to why Rule... why it won't work. You know? Like, he seems too on it to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there's... But there's no reason for it not to work. But I say the same thing about Nebraska basketball and have for the last 30 years.
And look at it.
And it doesn't work.
By the way, before we get to these hypotheticals, I wrote down the... So we've asked these questions heading into... We did it, I think, heading into year four for Frost, year... five, and then year one for Rule. What is a successful season? We both say a bowl game. I mean, I know it's so lame. It's so lame to say. Like, a lot of these, like, so here are the three questions.
There's no other answer.
No. So the three questions are, what is a successful season? Beyond just winning games, what's the number one thing on your list of something you want to see improve? And then what player are you most excited to watch this year? I mean, those three things, you ask all of Nebraska football fans, they're probably all going to have the same answer. It's, what's a successful season? Bowl game. What do you want to see improve? Close games, probably, like
stupid mistakes. Don't beat yourself, right?
And then what player do we watch? Dylan Raiola,
right? Yeah,
I mean, that's what it is. If I had, I don't even know how you could conjure up a different answer, because I can't go anything further on what is a successful season. To go anything beyond a bowl game feels like, I don't even know what I'm really saying there. You know, yeah, and then one thing you wanted to see improve is just, yeah, the mental stuff, the being clean, not beating yourself. And I get that mistakes are a part of sports and football, but, like, their hits, I mean, they led the nation in turnovers last year, if I'm not mistaken, whatever, yeah, it was, their turnover
margin. I mean, you could argue that just, like, high-level quarterback play.
Yeah.
Right? Because at the end of the day, like, that is the what makes the car run.
Yeah. Unless you are... Elite
on both sides of the ball in the trenches.
Like, you better be elite in the trenches, both sides of the ball, and on special teams. If you're going to be average to below average at quarterback, which is what Nebraska was last year, and that's putting it politely. You if you're not out of this world in all those other areas, you're toast. And so I can't wait to see just how good Dylan Raiola is.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and the other thing to add to that is that you have two guys that seemingly are going to be ready to push and to come in, right? We haven't had that.
No.
I mean, you say what you want about Harburg, but he's got an entire year under his belt. That's yeah. nice second or third string option.
He absolutely. Won five. You can explain it away at all, and I get it. Like, it didn't look great at times, all that stuff, whatever. He beat some not great teams. He won five Division I football games last year.
Yeah, and we're pretty darn close in the others, right? Yeah.
So having that as your kind of backup, that's not a horrible backup.
It's better situation. Position than we've been in a while.
Yes. You ready for some hypotheticals?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know. I think I wrote down like six or seven. We'll see how much I get there. Some of these are more fun to start with, and then some of them get like stupid and crazy at the end. Okay. Would you rather go back to 18, knowing what you know now, or get $1 million cash right now?
Oh, it's $1 million cash right now.
It's my answer too.
Wouldn't even hesitate on it.
What's your why? I can expand. You want me to go first?
Yes.
So I think it's also a window into how you feel about your current life, because I wouldn't want to risk changing anything with my life. And maybe if I go back to 18, knowing what I know now, who knows the butterfly effect of certain different decisions you make, and maybe you don't end up where you're at right now. You know what I mean? Like the risk of not being where I'm at right now, I'm not willing to risk that. And the alternative is getting $1 million. Like, it's a no-brainer for me.
Yeah. Well, that's a challenge. So first of all, the challenge with hypotheticals is I always want to ask qualifying questions.
Yes.
Right? As opposed to just taking
it at
face value.
I could, as the question asker, I can try to.
What I want to know is exactly what you said. If I go back and do I get to go back and just relive it up to this point?
That's why I don't.
If I go back, do I risk?
I think
changing the environment that I'm in now.
The way I took the question is, if you know what you know, I think that inherently means that you would take what you know and maybe do certain things different. Does that make sense?
See, and I think that that's just, my answer is I'll take the million and not even think about it. Because like the question that I would ask to the back of that is like, if you knew the outcome to the game, would you still want to play it?
Right.
Right? Like, the part of what makes sports, for example, so much damn fun is that anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with life. Like, I don't want to live with wisdom in hindsight. Like, that seems to me to take the whole point away from the game.
Right. I don't, like, because my first thought of this is like, okay, do you go back and do Biff Tannen and Back to the Future 2 and just bet on, you know, the 04 Red Sox and bet on the Cubs and whatever that was, 2014?
Right.
Or whatever, you know, like, do you just do that? Do you,
there's another qualifying question, right? Because we're going to Vegas. Like, am I going back to Vegas and I know the outcome of the 2009 championship game? Right?
But I think that's the point of my thought is, if you're going back, you're using the knowledge. You're not just going back to like, you know, you're getting off of like Splash Mountain at Disney World and being like, let's do it again. It's not like that. It's not like you get to hit like repeat and just do your life all over again. I take it as you're using what you already know. And I guess that's how
and manipulating
I
the situation.
And maybe manipulating the situation on some front. Because I guarantee you right now, for as much as we love our life and you could sit here and play the game of like, I do nothing different. Yeah, you'd probably have a few things you'd do different.
Oh, I totally do.
You know?
If it was a game and it was an experience, then like maybe I change my answer, right? Because like, for example, $1 million is a lot of money and it's not a lot of money.
Yeah.
At the same time, like the ability to go back for fun and know what I know now and have an experience over a hypothetical 30-year period of doing things differently, yeah, I could entertain that.
Yeah, because it's – so, yeah, I think we're on the same page. So I take $1 million cash right now.
I would take $1 million cash. And I would say that, like, philosophically, I don't like the idea of having absolute foresight.
Well,
because I think that like anything that you do in life, like your greatest achievements are almost always inextricably linked to shit you did wrong.
Well,
and so you think you want to clean that up, you don't.
Interesting. Well, it's even, it's like Groundhog's. It's like Bill Murray and Groundhog's Day. Like, he ends up knowing the whole day, and it's like,
why would I want to do that?
It's cool for a while. It's cool for a while. You know, you're getting chicks and you're da-da-da. You know, you're making the news, saving lives, all that stuff. But, like, there gets to a point where, like, the element of the unknown and really, really doing it, doing life, is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Okay. Would you rather, and this is, I took this as, like, you personally. Would you rather hit a home run as a pitcher, score a goal as a goalie, and I gotta assume that means hockey goalie.
Or soccer.
I mean, how do you do that? I mean, you gotta have the biggest...
Empty net,
just punt that bitch way back down there. Okay, home run as a pitcher, goal as a goalie, touchdown as a lineman. For me, I'd choose home run as a pitcher because I've never physically hit a home run over a fence, and I gotta, like, that's... I've scored a touchdown, I have... kicked a goal in soccer. I've never actually, like, played hockey. So I would choose the home run just because, like, I want to experience that.
I think I would choose touchdown as a lineman just because it's such a novel.
It's my favorite. I wrote, what do I enjoy seeing? It would be touchdown for a lineman. So maybe that's the, like,
yeah.
There's nothing better than when, like, number 92 scores a touchdown.
Because the thing that you got to remember about 92 rumbles
great.
In, right? Like, I can't remember, years ago, I think it was a Patriots, like, up back. He was a lineman that took a kick back for, like, 75 yards and got tackled at, like, the 3. It was, like, the most beautiful thing you've ever seen.
Right.
Pitchers, when a goalie scores a goal, it's a complete fluke, right? Like, something weird happened.
So,
like,
far
that to
down
me
the
is
list.
Just, like, down the list. The thing that people forget about pitchers is that a lot of these guys came up playing ball, right? Like, they're good athletes. They're good hitters. So, like, that happens.
Like, Greg Maddux would rake at your local, like, men's sub.
Right. Like, they're playing out there. Dinsmore and Maddux comes in. Like, I've seen actually some YouTube clips of guys doing that. Like, even, like, middle of the road major league guys.
Yes.
That come in and just, like.
So that's where it's a little, like. It's a little bit of a silly question,
right.
But it's so yours. Would be
like when Kerry, I think it was 2003, Kerry Wood hit a 3-run game tying home run in the World Series or the NLCS,
right?
And like that was amazing because you don't expect it to come from the pitcher, and then at the same time you're like,
it's still a, like you're saying, like it's still a major league baseball player that as he was growing up. I highly doubt that he was like, oh,
he
God,
hit all the
here
time.
Comes Kerry Wood at bat. 16-year-old Kerry Wood probably could hit the shit out of the ball.
Right. Oh, for
but
sure.
But he just was a better pitcher, and so he went that route and all that stuff. Okay. Could you throw a football farther than the 1940 Heisman winner? Now, I looked up who the 1940 Heisman winner. This guy sounds like a hell of a human being. Tom Harmon. He was a running back from Michigan. He was also an All-State quarterback. He was a World War II pilot. Silver and Purple Heart. When I was in high school, I could throw it about 55 yards. Now I could not. I would need to go to Nebraska Orthopedic and get like surgery if I tried to throw it as far as I could. So what do you at your peak, Willie Clefcorn's peak throwing the football, how far do you think you could huck that motherfucker?
Well, let me ask you a different question from a guy who thinks that Sec Henry would have locked down Pistol Pete Maravich. Sec Henry would have locked down Pistol Pete Maravich.
That's nonsense.
How far do you think I could throw that ball, Mr. Harmon?
Harmon,
respect for your service and everything that you did.
You think you could throw?
There's no doubt
it?
That he has his left arm like up in the air, guiding where the football's
that's
going, Johnny Unitas, and like he's throwing it. 45? I could throw that thing 50 yards.
I know.
For sure.
I know. When you see clips of old football games, there's very rarely like a super long pass.
It wasn't even really a thing.
So that's the thing. It's like, did they even really work on throwing it super far like that? I don't know. But So, gun to my head, I don't know.
What
people are more athletic today.
What also was the culture back in, like, I don't understand the culture that existed, say, like in the 30s. So if he 1940 Heisman winner means that like 1922 to 1940.
Mm-hmm.
Like what was he doing from 22 to 40?
I bet he was playing.
You own a Shoot 360.
Yeah.
Like that, the concept of that to somebody from in 1922 is like so amazingly like luxurious.
Right.
That they couldn't even think about the concept. So even someone like me who didn't play a ton of football, but grew up playing a ton of sports and baseball and played quarterback at everything that I ever did through intramurals in college, like I was still throwing the football all day. Right? So like I don't know.
The fact that he was an all-state quarterback makes me think that like he's probably
My default is to diminish anything basically that happened before 1970.
I know.
That's totally not fair.
See, and I think that's one thing we talk about getting older. I think as you get older, I get to be like more like protective of the past because like all of a sudden you become the past, right. You know? Like you become like you don't want to be.
If the past doesn't exist, do I exist?
Yeah, you go like if I shit on the past, you ultimately be like, "Uh-oh, I'm shitting on what I did," you know? I think people are more athletic today, but I think there are certain top shelf athletes, like the truly, this guy won the Heisman. So he was in the 1% of the 1% in 1940, whatever that means. I think when you reach that level, I think that dude, I bet that dude could heat.
Now you're making me change my answer.
My initial thought was, yes, I could throw it farther than him, but I think there are certain.
What type of ball are we throwing? Does he have to throw his ball with like the
stick? We give him
real weak, loose leather laces, or do we get to throw like a tight, like
a today, a football today?
Yeah.
You give Tom Harmon shows up. He's likely in like a suit.
See, that's like that's like the reverse though of our argument because he's sitting there in the 40s being like, well, if I had a ball like they had, like look at this thing that I'm throwing.
Yeah, you look at like old tennis rackets. I mean, I bet first people are like, if you gave them like a brand new tennis racket, they'd be like, well, I mean.
Yeah. Well, like, okay, so when I was growing up, I played a decent amount of golf out at the Knolls. My dad had a membership through his work.
Yep.
And so, but we didn't have a ton of money growing up. So I had a set of golf clubs, which I was grateful to have a set of golf clubs. But that set of golf clubs was basically my set until I was 16, 17 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm hitting the ball out there like 250, whatever, I'm a decent golfer until the first time that I grab somebody's Big Bertha.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you're like,
and all of a sudden I was like, not can I hit it as far as you motherfuckers, I can actually outdrive you.
I know.
I've been playing with Ben Hogan's club.
Well, so I don't know. So you think the quality of the football is so dramatically?
I don't know. Golf and tennis for sure.
Oh, God, yeah. Okay, final answer. I think Tom Harmon throws it farther than us. I'm going to give respect to a guy that was a Purple Heart in World War II.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes, Tom Harmon wins.
Put some respect on his name. Okay, next question. It's basically sum of money versus world peace. How much money would it take for you to choose the money over world peace? And I took the liberty of expanding on this question because I think the big follow-up question to that is, okay, does taking world peace guarantee world peace? Or do you get into like an offshoot of a philosophical question of like, is world peace just not possible? Like, is conflict inevitable regardless? Because if you believe that, then maybe, someone offers you $10 trillion. You're like, what difference does it make whether or not I take $10 trillion, people are going to fight regardless? Because if a part of this deal is world peace guarantees world peace, anybody that doesn't choose world peace is maybe the biggest jerk in the world.
I'm the biggest fucking jerk in the world.
You're taking the money? I'm
taking the money, and I don't even know how much money it really matters.
Like, you're telling me right now, you with one push of a button, it's like all peace in the world is just gone.
It's just
no conflict.
I don't think that it's as simple as a question of that.
That's why that's the thing. It's
because I think that. For instance, this is really intertwined with the first question, right? Because like I got smoked in the face with a jet ski when I was 17 years old.
Yep.
And on the surface, you can say that, wow, that's one of the worst things without going into all the details of what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that's one of the worst things that ever happened. I would not change that for anything. I think world peace would be the boringest fucking place to live on the ever. So like all of a sudden, everything's good. Like, I don't get to watch SportsCenter where Ron Artest goes up into the stands and we get to talk about that. Like, I don't want to live in a world that's perfect.
I took it to the extreme of, like, war. You're like, so peace on the war. Like, I've never thought, like, so world peace means no, like, Bill and Ted getting a bar fight. That's gone. Like, there's no conflict at all.
I don't know. That's a, again, that's a qualifying question to the hypothetical. So if you said end wars, then I can draw a different line. Okay. But if you're saying world peace is like gigantic harmony and everybody's just like, oh man, don't worry about it. It's no big deal.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to live in that life.
If you whittle it down to that, you whittled it down to like someone cutting you off on like 27th Street. And you want to...
I about accidentally swerved into a guy yesterday and he held like the amount that he held the middle finger was impressive. He went like runs on 40th to Wilderness Ridge.
I had a guy, I one time must have been going too fast. He came up too fast behind a guy in a motorcycle. And he ended up like pulling over and then getting next to me. And I truly thought, I was like, oh my God, a motorcycle guy is going to like try to fight me. And he was like, get, cause I was on the phone. He was like, get off the phone with your mommy and learn how to drive. And he held the middle finger to me so long that he got where I was like, wow, well done. It's not good. But so like that
kind of stuff, like I like that kind of stuff because okay. it gives
right.
you the story
I'm
to tell.
Still...
Qualifying question. Do you believe that we are eternal beings?
What do you mean?
Like do you believe that like when you die, it's over?
Wow. You went
That's
to it. You went we were in the deep end and you went deeper. I sure hope we're eternal beings.
I mean, this started out as like a podcast on Husker stuff in Vegas, but I think it's an important question to answer because part of the reason I answer the question that way is because I believe we know a fraction of what's going on, and that like if you're eternal, then everything that happens here makes sense because it's only tragic. The lack of world peace is only tragic if you get one life.
Okay. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
So give me that money.
So you're taking the sum of money.
I'm taking the sum of money.
I think that's... But this is the beauty of the question is like it's such a... It makes you want to ask a bunch of more questions to it, but that's kind of the point of it. Like, well, because it like is world peace inevitable? Or is world peace like a fool's errand? Like it can never happen?
Like can hypothetical questions be black and white?
Yeah, like I think if they're super black and white, that's probably not a great hypothetical question. Okay, so you're taking the sum of money... I'm going to take world peace in fear of my approval rating plummeting. Okay. Now this was the really, now we're getting into like Chuck Klosterman, arguably my favorite author, him and Malcolm Gladwell. This is where things are getting really deep. You ready? Defying all expectation, a group of Scottish marine biologists capture a live Loch Ness monster. In an almost unbelievable coincidence, a bear hunter shoots a Sasquatch in the thigh, thereby allowing zoologists to take the furry monster into captivity. These events happen on the same afternoon. That evening, the president announces that he may have thyroid cancer and will undergo a biopsy later that week. You are the front page editor of the New York Times. What do you play as the biggest story?
Well, that's a really interesting. I'd love to know when he wrote that question.
I know. I don't.
Right? Because it's hard.
It's a different world we're living in now.
That's right. It's hard to like. I mean, judging by everything that happens, both Donald Trump and Joe Biden control so much of the narrative that, like, if you're a press commentator, the ability to say good, bad, or indifferent, like that might get you the most run over these other things. I'm running. It's a tie between the Loch Ness Monster and what was the other one? Bigfoot?
Sasquatch,
Bigfoot, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going.
Here's this. I went anything with the president, you probably got to lead with that. But
it's so lame, though.
I feel like Sasquatch is the bigger story than the Loch Ness Monster. I think we all kind of assume, and maybe I don't want to, maybe that's it. I assume there's shit in the ocean.
Bigfoot has more lore.
Yes. Because I assume there's stuff in the ocean. People have never seen before.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying I believe in the Loch Ness Monster, but if all of a sudden it happened, I wouldn't be shocked. The idea that on land in a forest in the woods,
I'm going to challenge your response because, like, and again, it's one of those unpolitically correct things to say. Everybody by this point in their life knows somebody who's had cancer or has cancer, right?
And it's not as big a news.
And it's not good, and it's tragic.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's also like kind of numbing. The appeal is the president, but like in some ways that's like not that surprising. Where if you catch
cancers become so mainstream,
if you catch Bigfoot, like legitimately catch Bigfoot.
The unfortunate nature of cancer is that it is so prevalent. The big thing is that it's the president. Now, the big thing is that he may have cancer. It's not like it's
that might not even be a story in today's news, Klosterman.
I think I'm not so sure that Bigfoot isn't the biggest story of all that. Do you agree with my thought, though, that like the ocean, who knows?
Would you really be surprised if there was a Loch Ness Monster? Like, I don't know.
I'd be that shocked by it. I would be shocked because, like, again, on land in a forest in the woods, like, I would be shocked that wow, there's a Bigfoot? Really? So I think I'm going Sasquatch leads it.
Likewise.
Okay. You'll like this one. You're sitting in an empty bar in a town you've never visited before. Let's go Bush Light. Drinking Bush Light with a soft-spoken acquaintance you barely know. After an hour, a third individual walks into the tavern and sits by himself. And you ask your acquaintance who the new man is. Be careful of that guy, you are told. He is a man with a past. A few minutes later, a fourth person enters the bar. He sits alone. You ask your acquaintance who this new individual is. Be careful of that guy, he says. He is a man with no past. Which of these two people do you trust less? So do you trust the man with no past or a man with a past?
First of all, that's a lot to follow.
Some information is better than no information. That's probably my first thought is that like, past behavior is probably the best indicator of future behavior. So I'd almost say I trust the man with no past less. But I think at the same time, we get into the philosophical part of this question. Is it human nature to hope for the best in people and assume that the man with no past is a good person and you can trust that person?
So in these types of questions, I always feel like the best answer that you can go with is where your initial intuition leads you. And when you said the guy with no past, where my head went was Andy Dufresne, like going down to San Juanteneo to like erase his history.
Right.
So even though he has a past,
right,
it's philosophically, it's no past.
Yeah, because no past would mean like what? He's an alien that
he's
just arrived.
Nothing. He's
yeah,
just like been so, like so, yeah. Vegetable lasagna the whole way.
Right,
up. Like,
right. That can't be what it is. He can't be the Terminator, you know, and like show up and as a cyborg.
Right. So I think I probably would go with the person with no past, build a relationship, and then see if they have a past.
So that's where I think I ultimately probably arrived as I thought it through. Of like, I think my nature is to hope for the best in people.
Yeah. Well, and like the other thing too that I thought was when you read that, and I haven't heard any of these before, so
I could have prepped you on
snap
some of these.
Snap judgment. The guy that has a past, like I imagine him to be a whiny bitch.
I know.
Right? Like, just never shuts up and is always talking about woes and everything that went wrong. Where I'd rather just like be in the company of another person than listen to this person.
Agree. My thought was the guy with the past seemed like a bag of no fun to me.
Be careful with that guy.
Yeah, that guy sucks. Okay. Next one. This might be the last one. Your best friend is taking a nap on the floor of your living room. Suddenly, you are faced with a bizarre existential problem. This friend is going to die unless you kick them as hard as you can in the ribcage. If you don't kick them while they slumber, they will never wake up. However, you can never explain this to your friend. If you later inform them that you did this to save their life, they will also die from that. So you have to kick a sleeping friend in the ribs, and you can't tell them why. Since you cannot tell your friend the truth, what excuse will you fabricate to explain this seemingly inexplicable attack?
Wow. Again.
Again. You want me to give my thoughts to kind of buy
you
time?
No, no, I got it. I got it. I got it. We're going to Vegas tomorrow with a gentleman by the name of Tuta Snooze, right? This is a guy likes his naps, sometimes at the expense of fun. He also sometimes likes to stick around for a long time, and he's got to go. So I just kick him and tell him he had to go.
That's okay. So
there's no explanation.
I honestly, if it was truly one of my legitimate best friends, okay, and they kicked me in the ribs as hard as they could, I'd assume they did it for a good reason, and I'd just let it go. Yeah. Does that sound crazy? Like,
no, for sure. I'm also too, like, I can't just say something like, well, there was a spider on you, right?
Yeah, that's like a lame you're answer. Harry and Marv.
Don't with move, the Marv.
Don't move, Marv. Don't. Oh, you got that crazy look in your eye. You can't do that. But honestly, like, I'm on the ground. I wake up because you kicked me as hard as you could in my ribs. I would assume, like, well, Willie had a good reason for doing that. You wouldn't just kick me. I think this becomes a problem when it's like a fringe. You know, for some reason you're in, like, it's an acquaintance, you know, like, you don't know this person that well. You're kind of friends with them, kind of not. But, like, right, like,
yeah, I'm not going to question your motive. I'm still going to ask you the question.
Yeah, but, like, what the hell? Whoa, like,
right. To which I guess the hypothetical says answer that, but
can you just say, just trust me, I had to do that? Or is that like, or do you have to conjure up a story?
There's no good story. It has to be like a bug or an animal.
It has to be, I saw a huge spider on you.
Right. The Home Alone excuse is the right one.
It is. Maybe that's what sparked this question. But I guess my main takeaway from that is, if it's truly one of your best friends, I'd assume it was a good reason, and I wouldn't demand an explanation.
Well, because you can get away with just saying, listen, like, trust me. I can't tell you why. Promise you, I had to do it.
And to me, it'd be like, done.
That's good enough.
Done. I don't need to know any more than that.
Right.
I don't need to know any more than that.
That's the beauty and the equity of a relationship.
Yeah, where you go, okay, you kicked me as hard as you probably just broke my rib. But if you had to do it, you had to do it. And that's fine.
Now, does Klosterman have like a whole book of these, or where do you find
these? I Googled Chuck Klosterman hypothetical questions. Trust me, there's a bunch more. I'm going to save. There's a couple I want to save for Vegas with the fellas. But yeah, I don't know if he wrote a book or what it is, because these are fantastic. Are they not?
Yeah. Like, so all right.
50 questions for insane conversations. Chuck Klosterman.
Okay, so spur of the moment hypothetical. Uh-oh. We go to Vegas.
Okay.
And you hit the progressive jackpot for, let's call it, $13 million. You get to keep it, but you have to move your family to Vegas, and that's where you have to reside the rest of your life.
Do I do it?
Do you do it?
I mean, so you literally, like,
you have $13 million, but your family has to live in Vegas, and you can't move the rest of your life.
But obviously I'm afforded the ability, because I have $13 million. I can fly. It's not, you can travel.
You're just stuck in Vegas.
Yeah.
Right, wrong, or indifferent. That's your home now.
So now,
so
Mava, Mac, Marvin, Kim, I call them, say, I've won $13 million as a part of getting the money. We have to buy a house and live in Vegas now.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Would Kim feel the same way?
I think so.
I think so too.
Would you not?
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, again, it's a lot of money, but here's the deal. When you step back of it and you think about your 40-year-old question that you asked earlier, like, your parents are 6 minutes away.
Yeah.
Kim's parents are 50 minutes away.
An hour away. Yeah. Yeah,
right?
my brother's 2 minutes away.
In the scheme of things, like,
yeah, that's the only thing.
Money's a lot of that's a lot of money, and it's also
but
doesn't come without sacrifice.
But here's the thing. I don't see the reality is you don't see those people as much as you want, and I think with the money would allow me to like almost think I would see people. I could potentially see people more by like coming back here, and because I'm back, I would be forced to like. You would feel urgency. Oh, well, Nick's in town. I got to go see him.
That's a good argument. It is. The only place I don't know that it works is when it comes to grandkids.
Yeah.
Because that's true, right? Like, there's times when, like, I would live 5 minutes from my parents in college, and my sister would be like, well, you're right in Lincoln. You see your parents all the time. Like, I promise you, you see them as much as I do.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Barrett Root is now with the Atlanta Falcons. Barrett lives 2 minutes from me. I never saw Barrett.
Right. You'll probably see him more.
I'll probably see him more now that he's, like, with Atlanta, because he'll come back. And when he's back, it's like, Barrett's back. We got to go hang out.
Right. Right, it's not negotiable.
So I get the sense your answer would be you would turn it down.
Oh, I don't know that I would. I just don't know.
I just think, man, you take the third as long as it's an. And the question is just and it's,
for me. I don't turn it down. That's my spot.
Yeah, like, you love it. You love Vegas more than any place in the world. Like, as long as it's a sum of money that would afford you the freedom and the ability to get back to Lincoln, Nebraska, a lot. Then it's a no-brainer. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It needs to be,
the better hypothetical is like $3 million.
Yes, I was gonna say the better is finding whatever that number is. This is like an over/under for like, do you think the Buffalo Bills 9.5? You got over like finding that number of what is that number where it's a lot of money, but you're gonna drain that money if you try to do what we're saying of like, well, I'm gonna live in Vegas, but then I can fly home every other weekend. To see everybody or whatever.
Right.
So whatever that amount of money is, that's where the hard...
That's the good hypothetical. So
maybe the answer is more like $13 million or whatever amount of money, but you can only go to... You can only fly back to Lincoln...
Once a quarter?
Once every six months? So twice a year, three times a year, that's it?
That makes it way more tough.
Because, yeah, if I'm afforded the luxury of getting $13 million but having to move to Vegas, but I could just come back and fly back to Lincoln a lot, then, yeah, I'm absolutely going to take that. Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you, I know we got to wrap up, but since we're going to Vegas tomorrow, I think this is interesting. What do you think of or make of gambling sites wanting to get rid of individual player props?
Yep.
Based on how, like, gamblers are responding?
Well, and because of the, what is his name, Jonte Porter?
The guy betting on his own stuff
and got banned from the NBA.
Yeah.
I think.
But you can do that. You can bet on your own props, but like, what's your quick take on that period? Because I find it fascinating.
I think it's hard. It's one thing to bet on a team, and if a team loses, like, There's the blame pie gets spread out to where nobody's totally like the focal point of it completely sometimes. I also my first thought is like, so people are banning it because they don't like that it's gamblers are getting upset with players on a different level.
So like your point total 7.5,
and right?
You missed two free throws at the end of the game to land on 7,
right?
Right. Those players are getting accosted by people who bet on them.
Which to me is at the height of stupidity on behalf of the idiot gamblers.
Yeah, but at the same time, like it's becoming like people are yelling from the stands, like, "Hey, I need you to make this that." Type
I don't
of
care
stuff.
About that part of it. It's more of this of the Jonte Porter, the NBA thing, the sanctity of the. Of that, what you're seeing in a competition is not
like the Tim Donahue type
yes,
stuff.
Yes, so to me, if I were to say like we need to do away with individual basketball or football props, it would be because of that, not the stupid fans getting upset with the players. Like, does that make sense?
No, like, integrity of the game for sure. I could give a shit about the fans.
Yes, and like if the player, I get that it sucks if your players like. Yeah, I mean, it's if you missing two free throws cost Bill $100,000 because he idiotically betted on you to make those two free throws. Like, that's, I don't know.
Like, not, this is a total sidebar, but did you see the other night? I can't remember what game it was. The big guy, goofy looking guy, he missed the second free throw on purpose so that the fans could get chicken.
Yes.
That was great.
Because now, yeah.
Now imagine if that, though, cost you.
Right. Yeah, because now they're doing different things if you miss. They do a lot of that now. I noticed it seems like it's just a recent thing. I see it all the time in basketball, college basketball.
It was great.
If you miss two free throws, like it's like everybody gets Chick-fil-A nuggets or something like that. Yeah, I like that. But I don't know, the player prop thing.
Because you control that as a player. Like to throw a game is tough as an individual player. One, to execute it by yourself, but two, to do it without alienating yourself or in like the team.
Right.
Right. But like your individual prop bets, number of catches, number of points, that type of stuff, like you can kind of do that without
overtly altering the game.
Yeah, bringing attention to yourself.
Especially if you're a role guy. Like now if you're, I don't know, but like,
I think the guy in the Rams. I can't remember. One of the guys in NFL bet on his overs catches.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
No, but
yeah, I kind of fall under like, I know it's unpopular opinion, but like, I kind of like the idea of Pete Rose's mentality, which is like, I bet on myself.
Right. Yeah. As long as you're, I mean, there is a part
it still screws with the integrity of the game.
There are still lines you got to draw in the sand of like, if we start making the exception, like there has to be a line here because if you start playing the exception game, like everybody's in trouble. But yeah, if you're betting on the overs for you or your team to win, I mean, the overs for you, you could like in basketball, somebody could like
start hucking up shots.
But like you would think in theory that person would get taken out of the game. But I do think the integrity of the game would be the reason you have to like monitor that stuff. But I don't know, a guy like bettors getting upset at players not hitting their props is like, I don't know what you do with that. There are certain things that are hard to manage and
you can't control that.
It's hard to control that.
What are you most excited about for Vegas?
God. The unknown of like, what is, there's going to be some like joke. We don't know what it is. There's going to be some moment, some inside joke that's going to be created this weekend. And what is that? I know that's like, I consider it like, oh, I'm excited to play. I mean, I am excited to play blackjack. And when we start to get rolling and get laughing and all that stuff, but like just, there's going to be an inside joke that happens this week. That's going to like live on. And what is that going to be?
That's precisely the same answer that I
okay.
Have.
That's, I mean,
it's like you don't know what it is, but there's something that's going to happen that will live on and figuring that out as we go.
So that would be my answer.
Assuming we get off the ground.
Let's hope so. Let's hope we're not Scott Frost in 2018.
That's exactly right.
All right. We got to go pick up our kids from school, so we'll wrap this up. Thanks, Miz. We'll see you on the plane tomorrow.
I appreciate you.